Hello, I'm Keith Parent, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. Since we began this program, we've been to, of course, the Pacific a number of times, as well as China, North Korea, South Korea, Japan, well, actually most of East Asia, including Southeast Asia. However, today we're going to Central Asia, to the Republic of Kazakhstan. More than 25 years after independence, young Kazakhstanis are still trying to make sense of their dark history and their place in the New World Order. At least more than half of the 18 million people in the country are under the age of 30, born and raised in the post-Soviet era. Russian journalist Tatiana Mosavach travels to Almaty, the cultural capital of Kazakhstan, to meet young Kazakhs and to find out how they're moving their country forward and how they navigate their lives under an authoritarian regime and play their part in the global world. Today we present part one of Young, Cool, and Kazakhstani.
So I wake up around 6 to 7. I either jog or I go to my boxing class. Then I come to work. Most of the time I miss the lunch. I just forget to eat. That's my problem. At least 2-3 days I sleep here. I sleep on that couch. And you could see there's my toothbrush and a toothpaste on my table. I think I'm normal. I think a lot of people work like this. But if they don't, they need to. Because our country is developing and we need hardworking people with strong work ethics.
My name is Tatiana Mavshevich. I was born and raised in Russia and now live and work in London. I've always been fascinated to learn more about how my generation, who grew up after the collapse of the Soviet Union, is finding its way in the new world order. I've been keeping a close eye on emerging trends in Central Asia, and Kazakhstan is a particularly interesting case in point. With a total population of just 18.5 million, and over half under the age of 30, for me, it stands out in the way that young people are driving change there.
All of our processes are done by Scrum. This is the method of managing the projects. This is what startups usually use. On the whiteboard, you could see there are only three criteria. So I would say it's basically, what are you trying to do? So everyone knows what they're trying to do, what they're doing at the moment, and what they completed. That's it.
Bordering China and Russia, and at least three other volatile states, Kazakhstan is a predominantly Muslim nation the size of Western Europe. In winter, temperatures can drop to minus 45 degrees Celsius, and in summer they can go up to plus 40. And it's mostly desert, steppe and swamp, but rich in mineral wealth. I went to Almaty, the largest city and one-time capital, to meet young cool Kazakhstanis who are trying to forge a new identity and take the country forward. The young generation of Kazakhs are keen to get on with their lives and be part of the global world, but the past continues to weigh heavily on them. Kazakhstan was the last of the Soviet republics to declare independence in 1991, and its current and only president, Nursultan Nazarbayev, is still in power today. His leadership is widely regarded as authoritarian, with a history of human rights abuses and suppression of political opposition. So, how do young people bring about change in a country which is seemingly so resistant to it? Many of them had the opportunity to study abroad through state-funded scholarships, such as the Bolashak. This was one of the first signs of recognition by the leadership that the country needed to prepare for the future, especially with such a small and young population and the growing threat of radicalization in the country. Asel Yizhanova is an architect, a Bolashak recipient, and co-founder of Urban Forum Kazakhstan, which aims to improve the urban environment. She invited me to take a walking tour of the city center.
Hi, Asel, finally. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Glad to see you. Welcome to Kazakhstan. I'm thinking of taking you along one of the greenest streets in the city.
Sounds lovely. I think the best way to see the city is with an architect.
So. Oh, I will do my best.
An incredible thing about Almaty, everywhere we go, if we turn one direction, you see the snow-capped mountains. And it just gives you such a special feel, as if you're in Switzerland, but of course you're in the middle of Central Asia.
And this is the pedestrian street, so that you would see that there is no cars, just people sitting on the benches. People who work for the government during the Soviet time, decision makers, as well as the intelligentsia, they used to live along the street, so it's like a legendary place. It's quite typical. It's panel housing, but at the same time, if you look more carefully, you would see those kind of oriental ornaments and little details on the balconies and on the windows. Something quite unique about Soviet architecture in Kazakhstan, because especially in Central Asia, architects tried hard to apply some national identity, though the Soviet Union wasn't about the uniqueness, it was about just building the new or creating the new idea of national identity or language, because even these patterns and this architecture and this geometry, it is invented by the Soviet architects.
I'm thinking about myself as a Russian growing up in a very industrial, ugly town, Dzerzhinsk. I always thought that there isn't anything more boring, monotonous or dreadful as Soviet architecture. And now I live in London and in a way I started missing it, because when I come home I see beautiful bits, even to some of the most boring houses.
And I have to say that I did my master's in New York at Pratt Institute, and it was quite an international group of young architects coming from all over the world. And when we were introducing ourselves, I was saying, like, well, I'm from Kazakhstan, and that year was when there was a movie released about Bulgat.
Oh,
yeah, and I was prepared, like, now they're going to laugh at me and recall the movie. But actually the reaction was different. What they said, oh, you're from Kazakhstan, you're from Almaty, you have such beautiful Soviet modernistic buildings. And it made me think of Kazakhstan in a different way.
Graphic designer Dias Murzabekov also learned to see his homeland in a new light after studying abroad. He set up the Almaty Print Club to enable local designers and illustrators to use silkscreen printing machines to produce their own work. He was inspired by his time at London's renowned Central St. Martin School of Art. He took me to see one of his early works, a large black and white drawing of the Korean stall at Almaty's famous Green Bazaar, which now hangs in an orchestra rehearsal room next to his studio.
Oh, look at this. This room is enormous. The whole orchestra will fit in and practice in, and that's basically the function of this room, is for rehearsals. I really like the smell of this room. It smells like an old library or an old theatre. And right in the middle of the room, dominating the wall, is the painting of the bazaar with so many interesting images on it.
What's depicted here is the Korean aisle. So it's all Korean food, and it's not just any Korean food, it's local Korean food, because Korean people who live here, they're originally from what's now North Korea. So they're really different from all the Western Korean people, and the culture is really unique. It was during Stalin's time when the Soviet government decided to relocate them here. And the relocation itself was savage, because people were traveling on uninsulated carriages on the train for months without any modern amenities, and many died. And when they arrived here, there was nowhere to accommodate them. So local population took them in.
Dias's painting of the Green Bazaar was included in a major exhibition of contemporary Kazakhstani artists in London in 2016. Despite this level of international interest, Dias feels that art and artists aren't taken seriously in his own country.
The thing that we really lack here is an atmosphere. You feel that you are suffocating here without places like this. So the government, I don't think it's even realizing the value of arts for the economy. You have one interesting, really cool theater called Artishok. This is the only theater in the whole country that's really forward-looking and doing interesting stuff. There might be one place for coders that they come together in. So it's really rare, really spread apart, and you might feel, you know, really thirsty for culture, I guess, for places where you could come together with like-minded people.
With one of the most diverse populations in the whole region, it's hard to believe that there could be such a huge absence of cultural life in a country of this size. But this rich racial mix came about through a tragic history. As part of the Soviet Union, Kazakhstan served as a wasteland for nuclear weapons testing and as the base for Stalin's notorious labor camps and ethnic deportations. Aselya Yuzhanova's family managed to survive all those turbulent times.
I think the story of my family is the story of any other single family in Kazakhstan. Every single family suffered from Stalin's repressions. So my grandfather, he was born as a nomad in a very rich family, a rich tribe. But when the revolution came, rich families, they were declared as the enemies and all their goods were taken and people were killed or sent to Siberia, to the prisons, to work there for hard work.
Of course, Kazakhstan has a very turbulent modern history as well. After the collapse of the USSR, the so-called brutal 90s came that affected all of the former USSR countries. Those were the years, liberal years, but years of lawlessness and crime. And you were growing up in those years.
I was a teenager. We were living in the fifth floor of panel housing and we didn't have water or heat. Imagine in north of Kazakhstan, during the winter time, it's minus 30, minus 40. We would buy coal and we would go to the only water pipe every day to bring water to the fifth floor, and it was lasting for, like, I guess, 2-3 years.
Yeah, that sounds very poignant. I remember because my family was affected by the 90s as well, and my parents were teachers and their salaries were just stopped. And the government wouldn't pay salaries sometimes for months and sometimes for nearly a year. And my dad had to borrow money every day to buy food, and it was really hard.
And I remember during the evenings when there was no electricity, no light, no food. Well, there was a very, very, very basic food. We were sharing the food with our neighbors, and I was playing piano. And we were making those little concerts and reading the poems and performing to each other. And I remember I would go to the school from early morning to 2, for example, p.m. And after that I would go to bazaar, local market, and sell chocolate and cigarettes to make money and stay there till like 6, 7, and then go back home and do my homework. And that was my routine.
Thanks to its nomadic roots and ancient trading tradition along the Silk Road, Kazakhstan is renowned for entrepreneurship of every kind. And the best place to see this in action today is at the local bazaar. And after seeing Diaz's painting, I had to see Almaty's famous Green Bazaar for myself.
I'm in Diaz's car and now we're on the way to the bazaar.
So here we are. We are at the bazaar and there are aisles up top and there are aisles underground.
Спасибо.
Откуда вы, скажите?
Мы из Таджикистана.
Таджикистан.
Таджикистан продукцион.
This stand, it's got every kind of dry fruit you can possibly imagine.
So these are Korean aisles. It's the spiciest food among Central Asian foods that you could try. And these are meat aisles. I'm not sure how strong your stomach is, but yeah, they're very colorful too.
Here it says baranina, so veal, and right ahead of us is beef, and then I think horse meat is right at the back.
In complete contrast to the bazaar, my next stop was the trendy office of a popular online magazine for young people called The Step. It's on the first floor of a new skyscraper in Almaty. I met the CEO, 28-year-old single mum Zaure Rosmat. I wanted to talk to her about what drives her readers to succeed and why so few young Kazakhs were willing to speak out about their country's authoritarian leadership.
We did a study, big study, among Generation Z, and we know that they are not concerned about like getting a lot of money, but they do want to change something. What bothers them is family issues and stuff. So I'm not sure if it's a common thing in the world, because like we're traditional, we do love our families and we do take care of elders. This is not a common thing, but in general, the younger Generation Z is like this.
And do you feel like young people of Kazakhstan feel themselves as part of this youthquake that's happening all over the world right now?
I would say in general, Kazakhstan's society is not very active in terms of fighting for rights. But there is one common thing, is globalization, since we do speak English and they share ideas and stuff, but they don't protest. They want to travel, they want to see the world, they want to change something in their particular societies, they want to learn a lot. They want Kazakhstan to be more open, they want to see younger people in politics, they want to be their country more advanced in technologies and to be competitive. I would say why Kazakhstan is perfect, and I think many young people understand it, is like we're in between of East and West, and we are right in between. It's in our blood, you know, to be diplomats in a way. So I think it's just about our location. We didn't choose it, but this is the way it works.
What surprised me in Almaty is that many young Kazakhs who I met spoke only native Russian and didn't speak much Kazakh. During the Soviet era, you had to speak Russian to be successful, and even nowadays, Russian is seen as a language of opportunity. Harvard-educated Raon Kenjehanuli is a rare exception.
I grew up in a family of linguists. At that time, it was just two schools in entire city that taught in Kazakh. It took me around 1.5 hours to get from home to school.
And that was because your parents wanted you to study in Kazakh?
At that time, it was not cool to speak Kazakh for those who live in cities. But now it's quite different.
It's just over the space of 20, 30
exactly.
years,
and
it's quite different.
I would say it is even embarrassing for you as being Kazakh and not able to speak Kazakh.
Rowan founded the Kazakh chapter of Wikipedia in 2011. His interest in reviving the Kazakh language was sparked by his time at Harvard.
We were assigned to read one of the books dedicated to Wikipedia. The title of the book was "The Greatest Encyclopedia in the World Created by a Bunch of Nobodies." A few pages of that book was about Kazakh chapter. That really triggered our discussion among, you know, my peers and friends, that actually Wikipedia is not only encyclopedia. It's a very interesting linguistic platform that can show you how many languages are alive. So in just 2.5 years, we managed to lift Kazakh language in that list of languages from 127th position to 31st, I guess. So it was initially 7,000 articles and now around 220,000 articles. Projects like Wikipedia, or the next project that followed Wikipedia, including Kazakh language into services like Google Translate, it contributed to making the language more interesting for users of gadgets, for those who spend a lot of time online. So we mean young people.
Song from my album. It's a song about yearning. When autumn comes, you're yearning about life. So this is Autumn Drops. My name is Akmaral Zakayeva, and I'm composer, sound producer, singer, violinist, but known in Kazakhstan as a singer Mergen. We are standing here at my room where I love to perform. I start to write music from improvising and looking through the window to city when it's night time.
A
as a Russian, I can relate so well to that, to this dread of winter.
Yes, depressing time.
Yeah, 6-7 months of minus 20 ahead of you.
For a long time in Almaty, in Kazakhstan, people didn't appreciate singing in Kazakh. So they truly sing in English or Russian. It's a bad copy of Russian music or it's a bad copy of that American music.
You also received a lot of criticism from people, didn't you?
Yes.
That didn't like the fact that you started performing in Kazakh.
Actually, it was a problem about what was the sound this? Why it's so harsh? Why it's so unusual for our ears? It's not good. It's not Kazakh, you know, it's not traditional. What is this?
26-year-old documentary maker Kanat Bisikeyev is also challenging the status quo by taking advantage of uncensored virtual space to give an alternative view. He makes his films specifically for internet audiences. Kanat is a big risk taker. He rejects any form of censorship, and his documentaries have a huge following among young people. One of the most popular films he made was about what became of Kazakh children who were adopted by Americans. It was crowdfunded within days of an appeal to his online followers.
One of the popular projects it was about Kazakh children's, Kazakh adopted children's in America, who was adopted by Americans. A few years ago, Kazakh government was closed opportunity for Americans. They couldn't adopt Kazakh children.
That was following the example set by Russia.
Yes, I actually met a lot of children there when I was studying in America. And I saw the family, I saw how they, what they're doing there. And one of the time I found some video in YouTube, and it was Kazakh TV make some video about the children. And I realized it is something different which I saw. Because like TV making different story. How I feel that they made not really true story about the children.
You mean the Kazakhstani media here,
yeah. Oh, they became American, they're not Kazakh, they have another religion. And I watched that movie and said, yo, that not good project. They're very happy, they're healthy, they're doing well. Yes, and they have a family first. And they said, okay, I'm going to do my next project, big next project is going to be about the children. And I tried to make it all movie. Actually take me 2 years from idea to actual presentation. It was 40 minutes short documentary movies about the Kazakh children.
But can young people rely on the internet alone to bring about change? Dias Murzabekov.
You do feel that, you know, there are like-minded people in this same city. But the problem is that we only exist in this virtual space of Facebook groups. We don't interact, mingle. You've said that the city is beautiful. All these changes are very recent. Some of it was just made last year. I mean, we have new streets that were made pedestrian only. There is a community of people that's pushing for these changes, trying to create a dialogue with local city officials. And we feel that there is power behind us. I'm glad that there is a trend of not going away, not immigrating to the West, but staying and trying to change something.
And so they're coming back despite the lack of support, despite feeling that they are not necessarily valued for the time being. Do they feel like there is the momentum that they could really contribute to the future?
I think that momentum is currently building up and there is a critical mass of people that are trying to change things in the city.
Young Cool and Kazakhstani. That was part one. Next week on the program, we will bring you part two. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. Now, a while ago, PCJ Radio International launched a phone app. You can find it in the App Store by going to PCJ Radio International in the App Store. It's a free app to download, and it is already being rolled out in some regions. The regions are Southeast Asia, East Asia, and parts of the Pacific. Now, with that app, you'll be able to listen to this program again, as well as other PCJ Radio International programs. On the app, you'll also have a choice of which audio stream to listen to, for either East Asia and the Pacific or Southeast Asia. And both audio streams are operating 24 hours a day. Of course, now PCJ Radio International doesn't have 24 hours of programming, but we do have special programs in the block that are from our local relay stations in Cambodia. So you'd be able to, for example, hear the program that we produce for Cambodia in the morning and in the evening. So do look for us in the App Store. Anyway, that's all we have time for this week. We'll see you next week on another edition of Focus Asia Pacific. On behalf of everyone here at PCJ Radio International, I'm Keith Powell. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.